affected skin. "I'm sorry," I whispered. I wasn't sure whom I spoke to. The Masters, the Queen, Kai, Arcus, Brother Thistle. One or all of them. I'd failed them.
"Time!" a deep voice called. "Time!"
My head jerked to the right. Master Dallas stood at the edge of the bridge, holding the hourglass aloft. I stared for a second. Disbelief, hope, elation. The hour was up.
"Ruby, come on!" Kai screamed. "Now!"
I gasped and flexed my arms, throwing myself through the gap in the misshapen, half-melted chamber. My feet hit the boards and I grabbed the rope on the unburnt side. I took a second to rip the last scorpion from my head, tearing out some of my hair with it, and threw it to the lava below. The fire on the rope had spread to the boards. The right side of the bridge was in flames. I didn't fear the fire. I feared the supports would burn away before I reached the edge. My foot landed on a charred board and sank through, yanking my arm as I held onto the rope. I hauled myself up and continued on, choosing each step carefully.
"Hurry!" Kai called, his voice low and urgent. "Hurry!"
The bridge suddenly jerked and twisted, the whole right side detached from the cliff, the right-hand rope swinging uselessly. Only the rope on the left remained. I gripped tighter. I was still several yards from safety.
"Come on!" Kai yelled.
I balanced on the narrow left support, pulling myself hand over hand along the rope. When I was a foot or two away from Kai's outstretched hand, the rope I was holding frayed and snapped. I pushed with my feet, vaulting toward him. As I reached the edge, he took my arm in a ruthless grip and threw himself backward. We landed on the flat cliff top, my feet dangling over the edge. Kai scrambled back farther and pulled me with him. We stayed there, Kai on his back, panting, me half on top of him in an ungainly heap until Master Dalla offered his hand. He looked me over as he pulled me up.
"Are you unharmed?"
I looked down at myself, gasping for breath. I was all in one piece. "Yes." Kai stood, brushing bits of dirt and twigs off his clothes. I put my hands on my knees, my whole body trembling.
"Then come. We must return to the school to confer."
In a minute, I was recovered enough to trudge along the cliff path. "Simple congratulations wouldn't kill him, would it?" I muttered. Kai didn't speak for a minute. Finally, he said,
"They probably need to discuss whether you passed."
I turned on him. "Whether I passed? I'm alive, aren't I? I didn't leave the chamber."
"It's not your fault," he said, his nostrils flaring. "It's mine. I helped you at the end. I grabbed your hand."
"If you hadn't, I'd have fallen. You weren't allowed." He shook his head.
"If they think you wouldn't have made the edge on your own, they will consider it a failure."
My relief turned to horror. So I might have failed. As the reality of that sank in, I knew I was no longer doing this solely for access to the Master's knowledge. I was doing this for me. Somewhere along the way, passing the trials had become a goal in its own right. A way to prove my strength and, in some way, my worth. I wanted this regardless of whatever else happened. I tried to push the feelings away, but there they were. Failure would not only devastate me with guilt, because it would leave Tempesia at the mercy of the Minux, but the personal disappointment would cut me to my core. The scorpion stings began to throb. I focused on the pain rather than the fear that I might have missed my chance, and all that meant for me, for Arcus and for Tempesia. We trudged down the hill in silence. The Masters were far ahead on the lava fields now. When Kai and I neared the hill next to the school, I stumbled to a halt. The world spun and I found myself on my knees. "Kai," I said, blinking stars from my eyes.
"Mm."
He was still walking away.
"Is the sting from a Sudesian scorpion poisonous?"
He halted abruptly.
"Yes."
"Can you die of it?"
He turned.
Only if you're stung a number of times.
How many times? Just for curiosity's sake. I closed my eyes against the spinning of the world.
How many times were you stung? He shouted, rushing to grab me under the arms, as I toppled to the side. Master Dalla asked you if you were unharmed, and you said you were fine.
As he scooped me into his arms, my hand reached up to tug at his collar. The world was melting all around me, the sky blending with the land and swirling together like paint spilled onto parchment. I remembered an old song my mother used to sing when I was ill, and I sang a few bars as the colours behind my eyes blurred together and burst. The pungent scents of healing herbs were so familiar that for a moment I was home in my village in our little hut, my mother's soft hand on my forehead. When I opened my eyes, she looked different than I remembered, her features heavier, her hair darker. No, it was the Queen's face, but blurred, as if seen through a fogged window. Still caught in the memory, I sang a few bars of the song. As I sank into sleep, I heard the next verse sung back to me in a soft alto. When I woke again, I was alone in my room in Queen Ilani's castle, sunlight slanting through a gap in the curtains. I wiped the tears from my cheeks. I dreamed of her. Mother had held me in her arms and sang songs in Sidesian to soothe me. I'd all but forgotten those songs. She'd stopped singing them when I was very young, speaking only in Tempesian for as long as I could remember. But some part of my mind had held on to the memory of that music, triggered when I slept here in her homeland. Rising from bed made the scorpion bites throb angrily. My fingers and wrist were puffy and pink. Some sort of smelly unguent had been rubbed over the swollen skin, which must be the source of the strong herbal scents. I pulled on calfskin boots and stood. A wave of dizziness hit. I was leaning awkwardly against the bed, wiping at a growing layer of sweat that beaded on my forehead and ran down my cheek when the door opened. A familiar, mocking voice drawled,
"What a relief. I was worried you might not recover your usual stupidity."
I tried to lift my head to glare at him, but if I didn't focus on balance, I might fall. I settled for making a shooing motion with one hand.
"Thanks, Sood, you're just as foolish as ever," Kai said, coming closer. "I would hate the poison to have stolen that adorable quality of always choosing the option that guarantees the most risk and pain."
"I don't do that."
"No? Then how do you explain the fact that you're dressed in your training gear when you should be resting?"
"The third trial," I said. "Or were you so busy with your wardrobe that you forgot?"
"The scorpion's poison made its way to your tongue, I see. As if it weren't acerbic enough already."
"Never fear.
Acerbity pleases the taste buds if it's cut by sweetness.
Fortunately, your rosy lips are sweet enough to balance the bitterness of your words. Will you stop talking nonsense and help me back into bed?"
He raised his brows in mock surprise. "I hardly know which statement to address. The accusation that my compliments are nonsense, or the invitation into your bed."
He slid his arm behind my back and took one elbow, manoeuvring me toward the spot where I'd thrown back the covers.
"The first one wounds, while the second entices. Such contradictions seem common for you. I wouldn't be surprised if you like to bite when you kiss."
His rambling set me on edge. I made sure to accidentally shove a hand against his face as I tumbled onto the mattress. He was almost too jovial, too teasing, as if he was trying to distract me by keeping up a steady patter. "What are you trying to hide?" I squeezed my eyes shut against the room, which was moving like a ship in choppy waters. It took him forever to answer. When he did, his voice was as somber as if someone had died.
"I'm sorry, Ruby. They're conferring now. But it doesn't look good."
The breath left me in a rush.
"No.
I couldn't have failed the second trial. I couldn't have.
If I didn't pass, I'd never gain access to the library, never learn the truth about the throne. I cringed thinking of all the ways I had failed. I pushed back to my feet and stumbled from bed. Where are they?
The throne room. But there's no such... Ruby!
I flung myself into the hallway and hurried to the throne room, leaning on the wall for support. I battered away Kai's hand when he tried to stop me. Finally, he gave up and followed. Once I reached the room, I saw that three masters faced Queen Nalani, who sat on her throne, grim and solemn. Master Dallas spoke in his confident baritone, and I caught the words, "Rules that must be upheld no matter the student." I blundered in, uncaring that all eyes swung to me, and stopped an inch from Master Dalla.
"I would like to speak in my defense,"
I said forcefully, trying not to weave as the room leaned a little to the left.
"This isn't a trial, Ruby," Master Dalla said impatiently. "This is a decision for the masters alone, which will be finalized in due course after we have a private discussion with the Queen."
I balled my hands into fists and braced for the Queen to berate me and tell me to leave. But when I looked up, Prince Iko leaned over and whispered something in her ear. The Queen's eyes met mine and held as she said,
"You may stay."
I closed my eyes in relief. If there was any chance of stating my case, I wanted to be here to do it.
"This is highly irregular, Your Majesty," another master said. "If we let students interfere..."
Queen Nalani raised a palm to halt the master's argument and said pointedly to me,
"But if you stay, you must be silent."
I bit my lip to keep from arguing and focused on staying upright while Master Dalla sighed in frustration. A second later, I felt Kai's warmth, one hand hovering at my back, one at my shoulder, presumably in case I decided to pitch forward onto my face. I wanted to tell him to stop rescuing me, especially while that was the very sticking point that was being argued, but the Queen had ordered my silence. I settled for turning my head to glare, which earned me a raised eyebrow.
"As I was saying," Master Dalla continued, "if Prince Kai hadn't grabbed her arm at the last moment, she would have fallen. The nature of the trials forbids interference. It is in our codes, our sacred rules, which we have observed for generations. To have helped her means a breach of tradition."
"A breach of tradition," said Prince Iko. "So this is the first time something like this has happened?"
"To my knowledge, yes."
"So, in fact, your codes and rules cannot tell you how to judge this unusual circumstance."
A vein beat a rapid tempo in Master Dalla's neck.
"The code clearly prohibits the masters from interfering in the trials they judge."
"But there is no specific prohibition against a student interfering,"
Prince Iko said, his green eyes sparkling with triumph.
"Well, no."
Prince Iko made a gesture that clearly said, "There you have it."
"It sounds to me as if an exception has occurred," the Queen said into the confused silence.
Kai's lips tickled my ear as he bent to whisper.
"You see?"
He was referring to his claim that he was the exception to all rules. My heart was pounding too fast to appreciate levity.
"You must be silent too, young prince," Queen Nalani said to Kai.
He nodded in reply.
"The masters have always had the right to make this decision," Master Dalla argued hotly. "In this, we have always had autonomy."
He folded his hands and waited, as if he knew he'd just made the winning move. The Queen regarded him silently for several long seconds. Then she inclined her head.
"You are quite correct, Master Dalla. It is not a sovereign's place to interfere in this judgment."
It was clear where this was going. I broke my promise of silence, frustrated with the way my fists trembled at my sides. I might have made it safely without Kai's help. No one can prove that I wouldn't have. Let me take the trial again and I won't argue, whatever the result.
"Be silent," the Queen said coldly.
Prince Kai, she's clearly ill. Please take her back to her bedroom.
I looked at Prince Aiko, my whole body trembling, but he merely stared back with sympathy in his eyes. I didn't need sympathy. I needed a champion, a miracle.
I turned to Master Dalla, even though I knew trying to convince him would do no good. His black chain with the key hung outside his robes, winking at me temptingly. It didn't take much effort to lose my balance. I merely unlocked my knees and gave in to the vertigo that was already making my head spin. As I fell, I made sure to dislodge Kai's hand from my back with a flailing elbow as I lurched headfirst toward Master Dalla. He had no choice but to catch me, which he did at the last second, just when I was convinced I would crack my head on the hard floor. He grunted as he lifted me into his arms. I grabbed his chain in a convulsive movement, then forced the rest of my body to go limp.
"Take her to her room," the Queen said urgently. "I will send the healer." "Of course, Your Majesty," he said, and strode from the room, the heat of frustration coming off him in waves.
As Master Dalla carried me down the tower steps, the jostling motion gave me the perfect cover to slide my hand along the chain to where a link held the key. With tight fingers, I melted this link, and the key came away in my hand. When we reached my room, Kai opened the door and hovered as Master Dalla deposited me on the bed. I groaned and rolled over, sliding the key under my pillow. When Master Dalla noticed the loss, I hoped he wouldn't immediately know it was me who'd taken it. A minute later, the master left as the healer came in and held pungent herbs under my nose. I feigned waking groggily, answered all his questions, and assured him and Kai that I just needed rest. When the door shut, I breathed a sigh of relief, only to have reality strike harder than a punch, burying me in layer after layer of regret. If only I had controlled my reactions the way I was supposed to, the bridge wouldn't have caught fire and I would have made it back without any trouble. I still thought there was a chance I could have made the leap to safety without Kai's help. I'd thrown myself forward, and even if I'd slid, there were rocks and branches I might have grabbed to stop my descent. But there was no way of knowing for sure. The masters had ruled that I'd failed, and the Queen had agreed not to interfere, which meant it was over. I would never be a Fireblood Master. I would never be able to match the gifts of Brother Thistle or Master Dalla. I would never be able to prove my worth to the Queen. I hadn't realized until that moment how much I'd wanted that validation, how much I'd longed for the respect that would come with it. Most of all, I'd wanted to prove it to myself. I wasn't strong enough to be a master, and for all I knew, that weakness could mean my defeat once I had to face the Minax. As much as my failure sickened me, there was nothing I could do to change that. There was only one way to salvage some hope. I had to steal the book.
Chapter 15. I kept the key under my pillow until nightfall, when I'd have the best chance of stealing into the library undetected. After a few hours of rest, I was well enough to dress in dark clothing and slip through the corridors. As I hid in the midnight shadows near the servants' entrance, waiting for the changing of the guard, an especially tall figure hurried toward the castle. It could only be Prince Aiko. Rumour had it he spent his evenings in the observatory, a tower mostly hidden by woods east of the castle. He stopped, his chin rising, his head turning in my direction for a moment. I held my breath. Then he resumed his long-legged stride. I peered around the corner as the guards opened the creaking doors for him, making sure he disappeared into the castle. Two more guards arrived and the four began chatting. When their heads were turned away, I crept forward, taking a roundabout route and sticking to shadows as I picked my way through woods and over rocks and found the main road. From there, it was a straight route past the now familiar wharf. The wharf wasn't ready to sleep. A tavern facing the road had its door propped open, spilling light and laughter and the reek of sweat into the night air. Sailors guffawed and argued, their rough accents familiar from my time on the ship. I was about to move on when I caught sight of a familiar, broad, sun-lined face. Jarrow sat at one of the tables, his cheeks red with drink, his easy smile flashing as his companion spoke and gestured with his hands. Jarrow looked up, and for a second I thought he might have seen me, but then he took another slow sip. I moved on. A minute later, I heard the clump of approaching footsteps. I spun around, my hands automatically heated and ready to fight. Jarrow chuckled and showed his palms. "I surrender." I dropped my arms. "I didn't think you'd seen me." "A good sailor is aware of any passing breeze." His grin was wide. "Even one from the north." I just hoped he wouldn't ask me why I was passing by so late at night. "How is Ava?"
"Angry. I enrolled her in the school.
She would prefer to be at sea with me, but I have a peace offering. I built her a small vessel she can sail around the island." "On her own?"
"With a friend. As long as she watches the weather and tells me when she's going out."
"Am I considered a friend?"
"Of course, Ruby."
He stuffed his hands in his baggy pockets and rocked back on his heels.
"You don't even need to ask. If you want to sail, you can find me down at the 7th pier most days. Or here in the tavern at night."
His smile widened.
"And it's good to hear you speaking Sedesian. You learned quickly."
"I had a good teacher." He made a dismissive gesture, but he looked pleased. After we said our goodbyes, I continued on until I reached the school. Sweat had beaded on my forehead, and my stomach roiled. The poison's effects hadn't left me entirely, but I ignored the discomfort. I needed to be back in the castle before dawn. I crunched over the gravel drive and entered through the gate. No masters in sight. I crept through the school like a ghost, rolling each leather-clad foot from heel to toe. The hallway was empty until I reached the black door of the library, where two older masters dozed, one with her cheek pressed into her palm, the other with his head leaning against the door. Moonlight spilled in from the arcade of windows, and a single lantern burned from its perch on a hook. Slowly, carefully, I lifted the lantern and walked it back outside, leaving it in the courtyard. I could barely see the guards in this light, but of course they could summon fire to brighten the scene at any given moment. I needed to create a diversion. I was considering lighting one of the straw-filled practice dummies when a voice nearly startled me out of my skin. "A little late to be practicing, isn't it?" I spun around. A tall form stepped into a patch of moonlight. "Prince Iko," I said, hand to my chest where my heart was trying to break through. "What brings you here?" The shadows shifted over his face.
"I was going to ask you the same question."
I watched him warily. His eyes glittered green in the moonlight, but his posture was relaxed. He crossed his arms, waiting for me to speak. Every excuse for being here would sound weak, but I had to tell him something. "I'd hoped to practice alone for a while. It's so peaceful here at night." He paused for several too loud beats of my heart. "I may not rule this island, but I do know what goes on here. In fact, I know more than most give me credit for." He took a step closer. "If you tell me what you need, perhaps I can help you." I resisted the urge to step back, instead meeting his eyes squarely and trying to read the expression in them. What was he hinting at? And how could I question him without revealing something about myself? I had no reason to distrust him, but not enough reason to blurt out my secrets. It was like sparring blindfolded. Even if I needed help, why should you want to offer it? "I think we might have a common interest."
I doubted that.
I tried to buy time and to draw him out more. "Thank you for pleading my case with masters." His lip curled.
"Master Dalla is a pompous..."
He cleared his throat.
"Well, that is neither here nor there.
They seem to have made up their minds. Only the Queen would be able to overturn their decision." "But she won't. She said as much."
She never has before. He paused before giving a frustrated little breath. As much as you don't trust me, I don't trust you completely either, Ruby. You need to meet me halfway. Tell me what you're doing here, alone, at night, dressed like a thief. My heart stuttered and picked up speed. That was almost an accusation. I'm dressed for practicing. Am I not allowed to be here? I won't tell the Queen if that's what you mean. That surprised me, the hint that he would protect me, even if it meant hiding something from his wife. He was trying to gain my trust, but I couldn't afford to make a mistake. I'd already made too many. This confusing dance was losing its appeal. Time was running out. I had a book to steal, and I was standing here trading riddles with the Queen's consort. But it's only fair to warn you, he added. It won't be easy to draw the guards from their post. If you're caught, you'll have to explain yourself to the masters and to the Queen. I don't think you want to have to do that, do you? My hands fisted at my sides. I didn't like being pushed. I told you I came to practice. He ignored that. In only a few more days, you could have legitimate access to everything here. But alas, you might have failed your second trial. So here you are now. Fear fluttered in my stomach. If he accused me in front of the masters, it was his word against mine. When I said nothing, his hand sliced the air angrily. If you continue to waste time, you'll run out. When you realize that, come see me. He turned and disappeared into the dark. It took several minutes for my breathing to return to normal. My mind raced with questions, but they would have to wait. The night was slipping away. I opened my palms, set the practice dummies alight, then ran into the darkened hallway. Pitching my voice lower, I called out, "Fire!" and waited. The guards rustled into wakefulness, moving from their post to follow the light from the merrily crackling practice dummies. As they ran to the well for a bucket of water, I slid through the dark and up to the library door. It took a second to unlock, and I was inside. The door scraped the floor as I closed it, reassuring me that no light would bleed into the hallway. I lit a fire in my palm, using it to light four lanterns hanging from hooks. Bookshelves ran in two rows with a central aisle. Each shelf had a lectern, a shelf that jutted out at waist height, and benches faced the lecterns. The books were all chained so they could be consulted here, but not removed. There were hundreds of books and scrolls piled on shelves. Fortunately, during my training I'd chatted with some of the masters and gleaned information that hopefully seemed innocuous, expressing a love of books and asking about libraries in Sudesia. Master Sendrick had explained that there was a catalogue, a master list of all books, and beside each title, a system of numbers and letters that marked a book's position on a shelf. I found the catalogue easily, a narrow book laid open on a lectern near the door. I held up a lantern and drew my finger down the list, looking for Penilius the Wise. There! It was here! Excitement sizzled through me. I checked the shelf and lectern numbers and found the correct spot. The book wasn't there. I double-checked the catalogue, then the shelf. It wasn't where it should be. I moved to the other shelves and yanked out book after book. I knew the school's routines by now, and I was running out of time. Before dawn, prayers would start, and the guards would change. That would be my only chance to leave. After that, the school would be too busy. In my panic, I knocked my elbow against a shelf full of scrolls. Some of them fell to the floor. As I was picking them up, I saw the word throne on one and stopped to unfurl it. It looked like a schedule, with days and times. The title read, Guard Schedule, Throne, and the dates were from just last week. But I hadn't seen a single master guarding Queen Nalani's throne room. Unless it was only at night. No, the schedule on the scroll was around the clock. Which suggested another possibility. Was there another throne room? Chapter 16. I spent the next day searching the castle for the throne of Sude,
chasing my theory that there was another throne room hidden somewhere. I covered every square inch, aside from the private bedchambers, and found nothing. As I stomped back to my room, I avoided eye contact with the courtiers and servants, filling the corridors and stairwells with the black cloud of my mood. I'd made too many assumptions. Perhaps I'd simply failed to notice the guards in Queen Nilani's throne room. The throne on the schedule could be a code for something else. I was so desperate for answers, I was conjuring them from thin air. I didn't have the book. I hadn't passed my trials. I had no idea what my next step should be. Tired and dejected, I asked Ada to have supper sent to my room, where I sat on the edge of the bed, leaning against one of the corner posts. I was almost desperate enough to approach Prince Aiko, to ask him what he'd meant about our so-called common interest, to risk telling him everything. At this point, any action, no matter how dangerous, would feel better than doing nothing. Shortly after Ada dropped off a tray of food, Kai showed up. He was dressed in a loose white shirt, left open at the throat, and his usual dark breeches.
"Having a picnic?" Kai said as he motioned to the untouched supper tray I'd set on the end of my bed. "How pastoral. I've brought the most important part of any meal, the wine."
He held up a bottle. Wine felt too celebratory. "I'm fine with water." He grimaced.
"Very well. But I'm having wine.
Suit yourself." We sat on either side of the foot of my bed, taking sips. I was glad he'd come. His presence gave me a focus outside of the doubt and confusion fogging my mind.
"So, about tomorrow's trial," Kai said, twirling his goblet idly.
"Tomorrow's trial?" I sat up. "They're still letting you take yours even though I failed." I finally looked at him closely. How had I missed that Kai was bursting to tell me news? He radiated suppressed energy, practically vibrating with excitement. His lip quirked.
"Letting us? It seems the council was forced to have a change of heart."
After a frozen pause, I grabbed his sleeve with my free hand and shook him.
"How? Why?"
He laughed delightedly.
"All I know is that the Queen has never interfered in the Master's decisions about the trials. Until now. She went to the school this afternoon and, for a reason I can't even guess at, overrode their decision. She wants us to take our third trial. In my case, it'll be my second try."
His eyes moved over my face and he chuckled again.
"Are you sure you don't want wine? Should I fetch some brandy? You look as if you've had a shock."
I put my cup on the tray and took his shoulders in my hands.
"We have another chance!"
My smile was so wide it felt like it was cracking my face in half. Just when I thought all hope was lost, the Queen had turned everything around. I wanted to run and shout and pick handfuls of flowers from the castle gardens and weave them into garlands. I giggled at my own foolish thoughts. Hope was a beautiful thing. Kai grinned back at me, his eyes warming appreciatively.
"So, this is what Ruby looks like when she's truly happy."
He took my chin between thumb and forefinger, turning my face side to side, making a show of scrutinizing me.
"I shall have to memorize this rare and lovely expression in case I never see it again."
I swatted his shoulder and twisted my face away, laughing.
"I can't believe it." "You can no longer refuse wine. I insist."
He lifted the bottle, watching me as he filled my cup. I took a sip, using the moment to calm my thoughts and focus. Originally, I'd wanted to take the trials to gain admittance to the library so I could find the book. Now I knew the book wasn't there. Did I still have to take the final test? Yes. If I couldn't steal the information, I'd have to earn legitimate access to it. Passing the trials was more important than ever. Once I took my vows, I would be trusted, and the masters would answer all my questions. The third trial wouldn't be easy, though. Kai had failed it the first time, and he'd had years of training to prepare him. What were my chances without even a hint or two beforehand? My conscience nagged at me that knowing anything about what was to come was against the rules, but I discarded the inconvenient scruples. After all, I was doing this to defeat the Minnax, not for selfish reasons. At least, that's what I told myself. I flicked my eyes back up, catching Kai watching me with an inscrutable expression. I suppose you're going to be miserly with details, as always? He took a sip before answering.
As it happens, I've decided I don't give a damn about the code of secrecy.
My eyes widened.
Really?
Your close call during the second trial has altered my perspective. I want to give you the best chance to win.
I found myself grinning again. Then tell me everything.
Yes, I'm anxious to share the details of my secret shame that I've guarded for 2 years.
He smiled unconvincingly and took a few long gulps of wine, then picked up the bottle and splashed more into his goblet.
Mirth gone, I shoved the tray back to make room and sat next to him, my hand squeezing his upper arm.
Tell me, I won't judge.
He grimaced. You say that now?
Fireblood promise. He chuckled.
There's no such thing.
I waited. He sighed.
First of all, what I'm about to tell you probably won't help you. I'd assume that each test is the same, but your second test was different than mine. So it stands to reason your third could be different as well.
Go on.
The third test is about obedience. That's all. Obedience. Nothing more. It's easy as long as you agree to do the thing the Queen asks. Simple.
His brows drew together, and a look of pain passed over his face.
Or at least, that's what I was told by Master Dalla beforehand. Do whatever she asks and you will pass. So I resolved to obey her, no matter what.
So the Queen is present for the third trial?
She gives the orders and makes the final judgment.
I nodded. So what did she tell you to do?
He set the cup down and stood, pacing the carpet. I was sent through underground tunnels similar to the ones in the first trial. The way is lighted with torches, so there's no danger of getting lost. It's merely a long way, giving you plenty of time to grow nervous.
You were nervous?
Of course. He gave me one of his "how foolish are you" looks. Do you think me inhuman?
No. I thought about how often I'd seen Kai scared. Never.
At least not until my second trial. Not even when our ship could have ended up at the bottom of the sea.
Well, maybe sometimes.
I was nervous. I knew of other students who had passed the first two trials and never returned from the third, and friends who had passed the test and weren't the same afterward.
Maybe becoming a master changes people.
So quickly, though?
He turned to face me, the candlelight bringing out the gold in his eyes and making his hair shine like polished bronze.
The change was almost immediate. I said goodbye to a friend that morning and a stranger returned to the school next day.
Oh. He nodded.
So I knew it was something big. Something difficult that would transform me or kill me. I was nervous.
I took a sip of water and he drank some more wine. He went to refill his glass, but I grabbed the bottle and tugged on it. I need you to be sharp tomorrow too. For me. He paused and nodded, then put his goblet down on my dressing table and sat next to me.
I entered a chamber with a flow of lava running through the center. I stood on one side and someone else stood on the other. Someone I knew.
He cleared his throat.
I soon realized that it was a childhood friend, Goran, who had, well, let's just say his weakness for gambling had led him to some activities that were rather left of the law.
He was a criminal.
A thief, among other things. Tried and convicted several months prior. My other friends and I had mourned his foolishness in getting caught, and we'd drunk a toast to the memory of past exploits and moved on. though we'd been close as children, I hadn't thought about him any more at all, really. He'd left school a year prior and fallen in with a crowd of petty thieves and wastrels. It was his own fault, I figured. I no longer concerned myself over him.
What did you have to do?
Kai paused, then looked me straight in the eye. The Queen ordered me to execute him. Immediately.
My breath caught. Just like that.
His life was to be sacrificed for the greater purpose of testing one of her precious masters. What more glorious way to die? She actually said that.
Anger made my lips tighten.
She's as bad as King Rasmus. No, no, he protested a little too quickly. She was merely carrying out tradition. Master Dalar explained it all to me afterward. The final trial is about sacrificing something for the Queen, showing that you choose loyalty to her over all others. The masters are the protection and the strength of Sudija, etc. I understand it.
I suddenly felt very foreign, as if I would never comprehend Sudijan ways of thinking any more than I'd understood Tempesian ways. What did you do?
Well, if I'd had the ability to manipulate lava as the Queen does, I'd probably have used it. Much faster that way.
She does? I asked, blinking a little. He spread his hands.
It's the mark of the royal family. Since I don't have that ability, I used my fire.
He paused, staring at the floor. I had an urge to take one of his hands and rub the back until his fingers unclenched.
But then Gorin screamed,
he continued softly,
and the sound tore at me. He'd never had a very strong gift, and consequently he had a weak resistance to heat. Enough fire to gain entry to the school, yes, but it was obvious after a couple of years that he wasn't progressing. But without the designation of master, he couldn't claim his title or the rule of his parents' island. I think, in retrospect, his disappointment led him to his other activities.
He shrugged as if it didn't matter, but it was obvious to me that it did.
So Gorin didn't defend himself? I asked. Well, he was chained.
I swallowed my disgust, though it was directed at the Queen far more than Kai. Go on.
I attacked him again. Again he screamed, and then...
He inhaled sharply through his nose.
He started to beg. He told me his mother was ill. I don't know if it was true, but Marta had been kind to me after my own mother died. Gorin said she depended on him, and that's why he'd turned to thieving. He babbled on, rehashing memories of our childhood together, the time we'd stolen a fishing boat and been caught in a storm when we were 12.
His lips curved gently.
The boom had swung and knocked me out cold. Only Gorin's proficiency with boats had saved us. He took me home before anyone knew I was gone, so I was fine. Yet he had taken a beating when he'd arrived home later. His father was not an understanding man. I'd made it home free and he'd...
He sucked in a breath.
Well, it worked. Every word stabbed at my heart. He'd been my close friend once, and I couldn't hurt him anymore. I just couldn't. I decided then that I didn't care about the test. Not enough to kill my old friend.
So that's why you failed?
That's why, yes.
He turned to me, and I sensed his need for understanding, the need to tell this story. It was unusual for Kai to be serious, to show vulnerability. He might be comfortable with many emotions, but he'd never shown the softer part of himself, his secret shame, as he'd called it. It was a gift I didn't treat lightly.
He went on. The Queen warned me that there are consequences to disobeying her command. She advised me to rethink my obstinacy and carry out her order. I refused. 3 times she asked me to reconsider, and I refused.
He lifted his empty goblet and splashed more wine into it. I didn't stop him this time.
You see, I come from an old family, generations of Fireblood Masters who ruled the same group of islands. We've been unwavering supporters of the Sudijan monarchy, There was no doubt that I would pass the trials, especially the test of obedience. When I passed my second trial, my father held a celebration that night. All our neighbours and nobles from the surrounding isles in attendance, including several princesses who would have been pleased to see me called. He was so convinced of my success, he gave me his ring that night. He held up his hand, displaying the ruby ring he'd lent me as proof of his Sudesian ancestry. The ring worn by all Sudesian princes or princesses, even though I wouldn't actually rule until he was no longer able. He gave a choking laugh, his smile at odds with his shadowed eyes. I had tears in my eyes as he put it on me, a symbol of my ancestry, my worthiness to continue his line. I lived to please him, to make him proud, and finally I had done it. He was quiet for a minute. The silence was complete. The castle slept peacefully, only a rising wind rattling the casements. "What was the consequence the Queen warned you about?" I prompted softly. He blew out a breath and lounged back on his elbows, but his jaw was tense. "I could have borne a lashing or a beating without complaint, but it wasn't me who paid the price. The Queen took control of my family's island and gave it to one of the other masters, a prince's daughter from a tiny, outlying island who had just passed her trials. Her family had built ships for the Queen."
"So, your father no longer rules?"
"He and my sister and her daughter live on our home island, but in a small house far from the estate where I grew up. The clay on their land is so dense and rocky it yields barely enough wheat to last one season. I send them coin, but my father is proud and won't accept anything from me. So I have to give the money to my sister, who tells father that her work as a tutor pays much better than it really does. I've offered her a place on my ship, but she won't leave him. His health has declined. No doubt that's my fault too."
"You can't blame yourself for everything." I wished I could smooth the tight crease between his brows.
"I don't. I only blame myself for the things I'm responsible for, and that's plenty."
"So that's why you sail your merchant ship and occasionally indulge in a bit of piracy? To send money to your family?"
"Also because it's fun." He grinned at me, the same disarmingly roguish smile that had grown so familiar. "But I've been hoping to find a way to restore my family's name. And then, when I heard about you, I thought I'd found it. A nice, fat offering." I smacked his shoulder and he grinned. "In exchange for my second chance." "She didn't want me as an offering. She thought I would fail. You said so yourself." "Well, you've proven her wrong." He clinked his goblet to my cup of water and drank.
"So everything has unfolded according to your grand plan. Now you just have to pass your third trial."
"Yes, I just have to pass. And for that, you just have to pass."
The irony was clear. It wouldn't be just anything. He stared into his empty goblet.
"But what horror will she unleash on you tomorrow, What atrocity will she demand of me?" That's the part I didn't let myself think of when I came up with this brilliant plan.
"Is your test after mine, then, assuming I pass?"
"I would guess so."
I pulled my knees up and rested my chin on them. I didn't know anyone in Sudesia, so there was no danger that the Queen would make me hurt someone I cared about. But still, I don't want to pass if it means killing someone. I've had to kill before, and I made a vow to seek the light. I waved a hand. "Maybe that sounds fanciful."
"It doesn't."
He adjusted his body so that he was sitting sideways on one bent leg, his arm braced behind me as he leaned closer.
"I could have closed my eyes to gore and suffering and killed him. Afterward, sometimes I wish I had. When my family had to leave their lives, their identities behind, and move into a dilapidated hovel with a leaking roof, then I wish I'd been stronger."
"Cruelty isn't strength." As I said the words, I was reminded that Arcus had once said something similar after I'd run away and he'd found me in a blizzard. He'd said,
Tyranny is not strength. At the time, it had surprised me, the idea that the mysterious, ill-mannered Frostblood held an opinion in harmony with mine. The memory gave me a twist of homesickness. I waited for Kai to agree, but he seemed occupied with letting his eyes rove over me. Warmth slowly spread across my skin, and I was glad my heightened color wouldn't be visible in the dim light. It was confusing that I could think of Arcus in one moment and feel warmth for Kai the next. Arcus lived in my heart, but I didn't know when I'd see him again, or if there was any future for us. He had told me we had to let each other go a little, and I had tried to do that. Kai was here, and he was warm and charming and alluring, drawing me into his current. I looked at the floor, trying to sort through the confusing tangle of thoughts and feelings. A debate for another time, perhaps. He wound a lock of my hair around his fingers, seeming fascinated by the way the end curled. He brought it to his face and inhaled before tucking it back over my shoulder, his hands smoothing down my back. I shivered helplessly. I've had too much wine to philosophize. You seem lucid enough to me, I replied lightly, though my heart had taken up an elevated rhythm at the stroke of his long fingers over my shoulder blades. I hope you're not planning to use the claim of intoxication as an excuse to flirt.
I never need an excuse to flirt, though I prefer to call it appreciating your allure, any more than I need an excuse to breathe. And you are more intoxicating than wine, Lady Ruby.
I laughed to cover the way his words sent honey through my veins, and how I had to make a concentrated effort to push the feeling away. And you flirt almost as much as you breathe.
You don't mind, though, do you? He asked softly.
Not really. I wish you'd told me sooner about the third trial, I said quickly. Kai's smile grew. He knew I was changing the subject.
You realize what would happen if the Queen found out I revealed even the smallest detail of the trials. I'm sorry if it took a while before I trusted you enough to risk my life for you.
I let my breath out slowly. You're right. I'm sorry. But Kai, what do I do? If I can't do whatever she tells me to do, where does that leave you?
I don't know. But know this. There will be a price to pay if you don't pass. You won't walk away without losing something you care about.
Maybe you shouldn't go then. What if she decides to take my failure out on you? His hands cupped my shoulders and slid with careful purpose up my neck and into my hair, his thumbs stroking my cheeks, leaving trails of warmth over my skin. His gaze fell on me, dark and heavy, but his mouth quirked up on one side.
Are you saying you care about me?
Of course I do, I whispered, unwilling to lie after the way he'd opened up to me. You're my friend.
Just your friend?
His head dipped slowly, slowly toward mine. I could have pushed him away. I didn't. Suddenly I couldn't breathe. And I didn't care. I wanted the comfort. No, the excitement of his kiss. I was tired of fighting the sense of ease I had in his company. The knowledge that we were so similar, so complementary. Our worlds weren't at odds. I wouldn't have to bury my nature, my very essence, in order to be with him. It could be so much easier than it ever had been with... Thoughts fled as Kai's lips met mine. They were warm and firm, gentle but confident, pressing and moving with gentle abrasion, back and forth, sending sparks through the sensitive flesh that had suddenly become the center of my universe. His tongue came out to touch the crease where my lips met, and my breath drew in sharply, my mouth opening. The electric joy of it lit something inside of me, and then I was struggling to get closer, my fingers diving into the thick, bright waves of his hair.
He pulled me tighter against him, his chest a hard wall against my softer frame, his strong arms holding me securely as if they didn't want to let go. He pressed me back against the mattress, his weight making it dip, and his lips found their way to my throat. I moaned, and somehow that brought me to my senses. "Wait, what are we doing?" I gasped.
"I didn't think I'd have to explain it," he murmured.
I pushed at his shoulder and he sat up immediately. We were both breathing hard, and he ran his hands through his hair to leave it comically spiked. "You should go," I said.
"First," he said softly,
reaching out to rub his thumb over my bottom lip.
"What's your answer?"
All I could think about was the warmth of his touch, the way my lips tingled at the gentle contact.
"What was the question?" I asked,
struggling through layers of feeling. He gave a satisfied chuckle, and the dark sound seemed to trail invisible fingers against my skin. His voice was soft but challenging.
"Am I just your friend?"
I shook my head, coming out of the sensual fog he'd woven around me. He waited, but my confusion kept me silent. I did feel more for Kai than friendship. I couldn't deny it, but I wasn't ready to admit it to him. And no matter how hard I tried to let go of Arcus, thoughts and memories of him were always there. He was a part of me. I wasn't ready to let that go. After a minute, Kai stood and went to the door.
"There will be reckonings, little bird," he said, turning in the doorway. "With the trials tomorrow, certainly. But after that, with me."
Chapter 17. The next morning, I jolted awake with a racing heart. The nightmare faded so quickly that I could only grasp pieces of it. I'd been wandering dark hallways, crying out Arcus's name, and listening to him answer, each echoing repetition of my name coming from farther and farther away. I knew if I didn't reach him in time, he'd be lost to me forever. And the arms that reached out from the walls would drag me down into the deep, never to surface again. I poured a glass of water from the pitcher on my nightstand and drank in agitated gulps, waiting for my heart to quiet. The nightmare and my third trial were jumbled together in my thoughts, as if the first was a bad omen for the second. I reminded myself I wasn't superstitious, and dressed in my tunic and leggings, waiting for Kai to come to my door like usual. When he didn't appear, I went to his room and found it empty. I called his name, as if he might materialize out of ether, but there was nothing but lingering traces of soap and sandalwood. I stared at the meticulously tidy room, feeling lost. Kai had been with me on the way to each trial. Had the masters separated us on purpose? I tried to shake off worry as I travelled alone to the school, my midsection tying itself in knots. I concentrated on my breathing, swallowing past a lump of fear in my throat. After what Kai had told me about his third trial, I wondered if taking it myself was worth it. He seemed to regard his decision not to kill his friend as a failure, but I viewed it as a show of character. He'd refused to become a murderer just to pass the trials. In his place, I would have done the same. It was only afterward that the consequences, the loss of his family's land and fortune, had made him doubt his choice. How would he fare this time? If I failed the third trial, I'd have to leave Sudija empty-handed. Even without the book, the knowledge of the masters could have helped me defeat the Minax, otherwise it would remain free. I had to weigh the cost of preserving my principles, following the path my mother and grandmother would have wanted me to take, against saving a kingdom. I hoped the Queen wouldn't ask me to kill. I'd had to make that choice in the arena, and I didn't want to make it again. Master Dalla once again took me up the hill to the Temple of Sud, where I said a brief prayer. Then I followed a somber procession of masters trudging on foot over the barren lava fields in the general direction of Sud, the belching volcanic monster named after the goddess of the south wind. I kept looking back as I walked,
hoping to see Kai loping behind us to catch up. He didn't appear. We came to the ruin.